It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Perez gets the strikeout and lets out a roar. White Sox were up 3-0 heading into the eighth. And three home runs by the Orioles made it a 5-3 game. And that's our final as the Orioles win this four-game series, taking game three, 5-3.
Yeah, this is another in a series of very frustrating games in this series. A couple of comebacks the first two games. This one, you had a 3-0 lead. You see it slip away. Orioles are showing the Sox that they're a pretty good baseball team, but this one, very frustrating. You had the lead, it disappeared. So, day game tomorrow, get your rest, and I will see you then.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
That, the voice of Steve Stone, as you wrapped up a frustrating Cubs, or excuse me, frustrating White Sox loss. Eric Fetty was real good. And there's something in there, what Steve was saying about a very good Orioles team, one of the best teams in baseball, without a doubt. And this game is funky. Because if they really looked that much better than the White Sox along the way here, these games have been tight. As we welcome Steve Stone in to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Good morning, Stoney. How are you?
Good, Spiegs. How are you today?
I am very good. So, Orioles are awfully good. It's not as if the White Sox have looked outclassed in this series, frankly.
Well, what happens, and you know this as well as anybody because you've been around for a while, good teams take the game away in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and bad teams give the game away in the 7th, 8th, and 9th. That's how pretty much this game has been played for many, many years, and nothing really changes. And the Orioles have assembled a very good baseball team, and one of the things they do really well is hit the ball out of the ballpark. They had 75 home runs. They've almost pretty much doubled the output of the Sox, in fact, a little over that. So when a team can hit the ball out of the park, you can score pretty quickly, and that's what we saw. We saw the three home runs, and we saw a lead dissolve. But it does get frustrating, and we've said it over and over. If your closer or closers cannot shut down the baseball game, it becomes a really frustrating situation because your team battled, they got the lead, they have the lead late, and only to see the bullpen in this case give it up. And this has been a bullpen that's done really well lately, just didn't have much yesterday.
What do you think about Michael Kopech in general as he's made the transition? And here we are almost to Memorial Day. How's the season gone for him?
Well, I think it's been frustrating. Quite obviously, he wanted to start, but realizing that he couldn't, he did embrace the role of being a back-end, whatever you're going to call him. You're not going to call him the official closer because Pedro has not anointed the official closer yet. But he's pitching in high-leverage situations at the back end, going after saves and doing a lot of different things. And the frustrating part, I think, for him, as much as anybody else watching him, is that he doesn't have the pinpoint command or much command of the fastball. And without that, it becomes difficult because you go ball one, ball two. Now everybody in the world knows you're going to probably throw a fastball, and when you do, it gets hit awfully hard. Michael has command issues, and if he can solve that, the stuff is there. He can certainly close with that stuff in the major leagues. It's just getting the ability to throw it where he wants it that has been problematic.
So, I mean, Michael is probably going to get, you know, some teams interested. And he's among many who will get some teams interested and get the phone calls going. You had a chance to have, what, 10, 15 minutes with Chris Getz the other day during the broadcast. Just in terms of the trade deadline and just the openness that Chris will bring to it, what did you take away from that conversation in terms of knowing who's available, who might not be available?
Well, I think it's a very, very small group when you say who's not available. I think Chris is going with the idea that if we can make a deal for anybody and come away a better team, he's certainly ready to consider and potentially embrace that particular deal. So if you're asking, are there untouchables, there are guys that he would just as soon not move, but there are no untouchables. There's not one guy in that dugout or locker room that's an untouchable, and that's absolutely the way it should be. When you want to get better, you sometimes get better by trading away some talent that can help somebody right today for a whole lot of tomorrow, and that's how these deals are usually structured.
I mean, Garrett Crochet does not become an unrestricted free agent until 2027. He's making less than a mil this year. He's been an incredible bright spot, and I want to ask you about him on the pitching front, but even that name, it's tough for me to hear that and think about it, but I suppose with the volatility of arms, even that name needs to be on the list of possibles.
Yeah, I mean, Chris is going to say to whoever inquires, let me hear what you've got. What's your proposal? Because at this point, every major league team knows exactly what every other major league team has in the minor leagues. And for Chris Getz in his front office, they went through all of this with a whole lot of teams when they were trying to move Dylan Cease. So when Baltimore came a-calling, and they did, and a lot of other teams did also, very much interested in Dylan Cease, and San Diego was the lucky team because he's doing a great job with them. But when he went through that, he went through every team that called him, their minor leagues, and who they would want to ask for in that situation. You always talk to a general manager and ask him what he's willing to give for your asset, and then you try to figure out, well, okay, you got to give us this guy. This guy, no, I can't give you that guy, and then you move on to somebody else. So that's how this works. And, yeah, I mean, Garrett Crochet would be probably Garrett Crochet, Luis Robert, and maybe, this is going to surprise you, maybe Jordan Leisure might be three guys they don't want to move. However, you make Chris the right offer, and he will move anybody.
Yeah, no, Leisure's been awfully impressive. Well, tell me what you see with Leisure, and obviously there's long-term salary control there as well.
Well, there's a couple of things that have to happen, and when you bring a guy to the back end in high leverage situations in the major leagues who hadn't been there, he's going to go through some growing pains. And with Leisure, he's got such a good arm and a deceptive fastball, because there's a lot of guys these days throwing 95, 96. But more times than not, when they miss, they get hit awfully hard. With Leisure, he doesn't get hit all that hard because the ball has some late life to it. So it's a perceived velocity that's better than the 95 or 6 that he throws, and guys don't adjust to it real well. But he's got to get some experience at the back end, and that's one of the things with both Michael Kopech and Jordan Leisure. You got two guys that have never done this job over the long haul, and you're teaching them a lot of different things about how to do it, and that's difficult. This is not an easy job, because if it was, every team would have a lockdown closer, and we know that's not the case.
Jordan Leisure and Nick Nastrini, part of the package that came to the White Sox for Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly last year. And, Drew Thorpe, who is maybe the most, is certainly the closest to the big leagues piece that came in the Dylan Cease trade. Dylan Cease trade is another that we might get to see here. All right, let's go back to Garrett Crochet. Tell us about his season. It's a guy with a massive arm, but that's a different thing than learning how to be a starter in the big leagues. What are you seeing from him?
Well, look, this is exactly what nobody can really tell you at this point, because Garrett Crochet has never started at the beginning of a major league season, been in the rotation when the season ended. So you're talking about in the neighborhood of 32 starts. We don't know how he's going to react when he starts to get tired. And every starting pitcher will, especially an inexperienced one. And Garrett doesn't have that backlog of starting over a long period of time to figure out how he's going to adjust to this. So we have to see as an organization how he's going to do pitching tired, because that's going to be around start, 17, 18, maybe start 19. He's going to get a little fatigued. It's only natural for a guy who hasn't been there. I mean, the most major league innings he ever had was, I think, 53, something along those lines. And he's going to the mound today, assuming there will be baseball. And talking with the sod father, Roger Bossert tells me that we're going to get it in, but it's going to be a long day. So Crochet goes to the mound. It's always exciting. But I want to see how he does as he moves along, because you can't evaluate what he's going to be until you see what he is during the tired time of the season.
How is Roger Bossert? For those who don't know, that is the groundskeeper extraordinaire of the White Sox. And I believe I learned this from Dan McNeil. I believe that Roger is the son of a son of a groundskeeper, right? This is third generation here, an absolute king among men. How's he doing these days?
Well, look, when I was growing up in Cleveland, they had a groundskeeper, and his name, and I remembered that. I don't know, little kids remembering the groundskeeper name, but he was a pretty good groundskeeper. His name was Emil Bossert.
Wow.
And so I grew up with Emil Bossert manicuring the field at Old Municipal Stadium in Cleveland. And then I got to Chicago, and there was Gene Bossert. I wonder if he's any relation to Emil. And then there was the sod father, Roger. So, yes, it's three generations of sod fathers, all very good at what they do. And I've been involved with the Bossers for quite some time as a five-year-old growing up in Cleveland and knowing the name of the groundskeeper, Emil Bossert.
But, you know, I'm just Googling here. George Toma, the legendary Hall of Fame groundskeeper, says, quote, Emil Bossert was the greatest groundskeeper of all time, unquote. So, I mean, the mind reels with some of the, I'm sure, the inventions and the technology and the methodology that Emil Bossert must have invented and passed down.
Yeah, I mean, and his grandson that we're lucky to have here has built a lot of major league fields.
Yes.
I mean, he's responsible for many of these playing surfaces that the players play on. And you know one thing, it's going to have great drainage because Roger's really good at that. The field is going to look really good, and Roger is still going to get aggravated when somebody gets on it that's not supposed to be there.
Oh, I thank you for this curiosity, you know, this deep dive I'm going to take now. Emil Bossert had the nicknames the Doctor of the Diamond and the Evil Genius of Groundskeepers. Joe DiMaggio used to say, Stoney, the Yankees hated to come to Cleveland because our every defensive flaw was exploited by the Bossards, the way they prepared the playing field.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you get a sinker baller, in those days you had a sinker baller, you know he's going to throw a lot of ground balls, and suddenly you take a look, and it's almost like a moat in front of home plate. That first bounce gets absorbed. By the time it gets to the infielders, it's a little trickle, and nothing ever gets through. So, yeah, there's a few tricks that groundskeepers can do, and I'm sure at this point that Roger knows each and every one of them backwards and forwards.
I mean, the Orioles farm system is still so stocked. And then you look here, and the players that are here, among those born 1998 or later, Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser with that great catch the other night, Kyle Stowers. I mean, they're just so freaking loaded with position players of consequence. Is that still the way to build? It has to be, I think, Steve.
Well, I think that's the least expensive way to build, and I think it's the preferred method. Now, some teams do it much better than others, and when you don't draft and develop well, what happens is you have to go and trade some of your major league assets to get some people from other organizations who are scouted pretty well and developed even better. So when that happens, you take advantage of their system. But I think the Sox, and you mentioned it the last time at Birmingham, have shown they've got some talent down there. Birmingham is a very good Double-A team, maybe one of the best in the country. And it's inhabited by probably the top or most of the top prospects in the Sox organization. And that gives you some faith that there is some talent down there to be brought to the major leagues. But if ideally you wanted to construct your team, you would have a wonderful scouting system, a player development aspect that that was second to none. And then you've got to be very fortunate when you're making deals. You have to evaluate your side with more depth than you evaluate the other side, because you have to know who you want to trade and who you don't. So it's very complicated, and teams are going through that now.
Talking to Steve Stone right here on 670 The Score. Baseball world, frankly, still buzzing in part about that interference call at the end of the game the other day. Color me surprised when MLB admits the next day that there should have been some discretion. I thought that the letter of the rule was all that mattered and was observed. What did you think about the fallout from that with the MLB conversation the next day?
Well, look, I understood the rule, And then I looked at Andrew Vaughn. It was almost impossible for him trying to, one, locate the baseball and then locate where Henderson was. But intent is not the issue. The issue is it does say that in the rule book. However, using some common sense, there was nothing disruptive about that play. Henderson had a great deal of time to get under it. The hitter was out as soon as he popped the ball up. It was an infield fly rule. And I think sometimes you have to take a look at a rule and say, was it really broken? Did it affect anything? And if the answer is no, well, then I think you can mention maybe to Andrew Vaughn, you know, next time do this, whatever the case may be. But it was a strange way to end the game, and I think Major League Baseball admitting that. And as far as knowing the rules, yeah, that is a rule. However, it's a rule that sometimes discretion would mean you look away if there's no effect on the actual play, and there was none on that play.
The passion from you guys and the anger at the umpires, the frustration from John, your partner, John Schriffen, and you, have you had any moments where it feels like sitting with Hawk? Because it felt so similar in some ways in terms of the explosion of emotion and the passion directed at the umpires.
Well, look, Hawk was, I think, about 38 years or so in this booth. He was a part of the White Sox organization, and he took every loss personally. So that was his personality, and the only time it got difficult was when something bad happened and then Hawk didn't talk. That became a little difficult because I found myself in many situations, like a Seattle situation, where we were up 5-0 in, I believe, the 14th inning. We had scored 5 runs. And lo and behold, Seattle comes back and matches our 5 on a grand slam home run by Seager. And then Hawk didn't say anything. I had to do the rest of the inning. I didn't know exactly where he was going to go. He just sat there, just didn't say anything. And we eventually won that game 7-5. But it was a very frustrating inning. You score 5 in the 14th. You don't expect to be tied in the bottom half.
Yeah, it's a tough spot when your partner goes in the tank. I've been there. It's like, uh-oh, this is going to be a bumpy go. When's our break? How many outs? Yeah, it can be a rough go. All right, Steve, who's the best team in baseball right now in your mind?
Well, Philadelphia is up there because I really like what they've done offensively, and those top 3 starting pitchers are difficult to deal with. They're one of the teams that's very good. As far as the American League is concerned, I think the powerful teams, for the most part, and there's obviously good teams in the American League, but I'm thinking that that group of teams in the National League with Atlanta, the Dodgers, I think the National League is a little bit tougher at the top end. And so the best teams for me come out of the National League.
All right. Well, tell Roger Bossert I said hello, and I hope you get the ball game in. Thank you, Steve.
He just tells me it's going to be a long day, Spiegs. I'll talk to you later. Have a good show.
All right. Thank you so much. Steve Stone right there on 670 The Score. Who is our team of the moment this week? It's an American League ball club, and it pains me. That should give you the idea. We'll do it next on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Again, see ya! A long home run into the second deck. 2-0 Yanks.
Well, Dylan Cease is a fastball pitcher, but he threw a curveball here, as Aaron Judge did yesterday in the third. Kind of a curveball that got a lot of the plate, and he is hot right now, Michael. Great hitters that are hot are going to do great things.
New York, New York. Oh, God. It's just nauseating.
The face you made as you heard that music.
There's just so few things that I loathe more in the sports universe than the New York Yankees. It's just so few. But they were 20-13 on the 2nd of May. Now they're 37-17. That means they're 17-4 in their last 21 games. That means I must begrudgingly, here on Hit and Run, on 670 The Score, I must begrudgingly call them the team of the moment.
That is driven deep to right field. See ya! A long two-run home run. Yankees lead 3-0. That's good to left field and deep. See ya! A long home run into the second deck. Yankees go back to back, and they lead 4-0. So here's Stanton. Driven deep to left field. There it goes! See ya! Oh, what a home run by Stanton! And the Yankees are pouring it on. They lead 6-0.
They got three guys in this lineup that just judge Stanton, Soto. When they hit it hard, it just sounds a little bit different. That's not the microphone. They just hit a little bit harder.
It was the team of the moment.
Ugh.
Offering entertainment. The team of the moment. They caught our eyes.
Look, I have a deep-seated dislike for them. I was born and raised a Red Sox fan, so I come by it naturally. All of my fantasy teams have no Yankees on it. I would rather lose without Yankees than win with Yankees. I have proven that I can win without them, though. But anyway, they're really freaking good. Those three guys who all homered off Yu Darvish in the same inning. Yu Darvish, man! Judge has 17 homers, leading MLB. Also has an OPS over 1. Juan Soto has 14 homers. He is 6th in MLB in that regard. Also has an OPS of 977. He's been incredible on the season and is in MVP conversations. And Stanton has 13 homers. So they've got that murderer's row of absolute bombers. And that's the headline when you think about the Yankees. But the truth of it is that their starting pitching has been unbelievable. The Yankees' starting pitching has the second best ERA in baseball. Overall, their pitching has simply the best ERA in baseball. They're the only team with an ERA under 3 in all of MLB. It's the Yankees, number one at 2.78. The Phillies then at 3.11, and the Red Sox, the Guardians, the Royals. Those are the best pitching staffs in baseball. And they're doing it all without Gerrit Cole. Dude hasn't thrown a pitch for them. And still, this is them? Unbelievable. Saw this, that the Yankees, for the 12th time, had a starting pitcher go at least 6 scoreless innings. 12 times. That's the most in MLB. And their entire team had that 11 times all of last year. It's not even the end of May. They've done it 12 times. You want more? I'll give you more. Starting pitchers have now thrown 11 straight starts of at least 5 innings and 2 earned runs or fewer for the first time in the history of the franchise. First time in the history of the franchise. And that's why the Yankees' rotation is 2nd in ERA, 2nd in strikeouts, 5th in walks plus hits per innings pitched, 3rd in starters innings, and all of it without Gerrit Cole. Maybe the headliner is the kid Luis Gill, who's throwing 96 with turbo changeups at about 92. It's like a 4-seamer, really, but it's that turbo changeup, the cambio, which has been made famous of late down in Florida. Sandy Alcantara has it. Pablo Lopez learned it down there, now doing it in Minnesota. Edvard Cabrera has it down there. Sixto Sanchez has it down there. They've got a lot of dudes who throw it. It's a turbo changeup factory down there. But Luis Gill throwing it as well. There is some thought that it might affect the arm. Luis Gill's coming off Tommy John, for that matter. But anyway, Yankees are loaded and very, very good. And I hate it, and the world is a terrible place. Not really, but still. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Got some time for some open phone lines here before the top of the hour when we talk to Doug Glanville. It is hit and run here on 670 The Score. The Yankees have the best run differential in the American League, just one run off of the Phillies for the best run differential in baseball. And they are certainly among an upper class, an upper crust of teams in MLB that includes them and the Orioles, includes the aforementioned Phillies and the Dodgers and the Braves. And then you've got a drop-off. After those 5, you've got a drop-off. And the teams next who can claim to have a say in swimming in those waters would be the Guardians and the Royals and the Brewers. And yes, perhaps the Chicago Cubs, but really just perhaps. The Cubs have a -2 run differential. After hanging around in the positive for a while, they are one of those in the minus. It has been the Royals and the Guardians who've been very impressive in the American League Central. And I'm a believer in the Guardians. Not sure about the Royals, but maybe they'll be a team of the moment coming up. And they have won 8 in a row. Both the Royals and the Guardians have won 8 in a row in 9 of their last 10. So give it up for them. But really, anything I can do to get off of the Yankees is something I will try to do here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. To the phone lines we go. Ben is in Queens and is on Hit and Run. Good morning, sir. How are you, Ben?
We're not getting off the Yankees. Not for a New York minute. I hate to tell you. First of all, Spiegs, it's Luis Gil. G in Spanish, heel.
Thank you.
The heel of your foot.
Okay? Of course. Okay.
But listen, okay, I had a whole Cubs call ready. You know, I got my legal pad. You know me.
Yeah.
But I have had a baseball hangover this week. I went Monday to the stadium to see what is ostensibly the best team in the American League. They dominated for 8 innings, and then all of a sudden the Mariners came out of nowhere and scored 5 in the 9th and beat them. But this team, you know, Juan Soto, he looks like an all-time great. And, you know, you listen to the fan over here, and they're talking, you know, they're talking like starting with a 7, starting with an 8, you know, and I don't think the Yankees can go that high, but he's just looking like an all-time great. You know, I will say this, Rodon has looked really good as well.
Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman is having a very nice start to the year. We've seen that before. Clark Schmidt has pitched well. Rodon has looked good. I don't know if they're going to be able to pay Soto. I think the Dodgers kind of screwed the pooch in terms of the deferments, because now it's going to be expected that the Yankees just go as high as they need to go and defer everything. And I'm not so sure Hank Steinbrenner wants to play that game.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't really have an answer. A lot of the scuttlebutt is that, you know, the Mets would put out that money because, you know, they have it. But,
sure.
You know, I saw Stroman. Stroman pitched on Monday, and he looked lights out. I mean, he was great. But I would say this, you know, for baseball, would it be such a bad thing, a Yankees-Dodgers World Series?
No.
I mean, I'll just leave you with that. Love you, Spies. I'll talk to you about the Cubs one of these days.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. No, I mean, Yankees-Dodgers is the archetypal World Series of a lot of people's youths. 77 and 78, it was Dodgers-Phillies in the playoffs in the NL. It was Yankees-Royals in the playoffs in the AL. And those were some of the first World Series I was really cognizant of. And those Yankees-Dodgers series, I mean, that would really stoke a lot of nostalgia for people of a certain age. And it's obviously also tremendously huge markets and an opportunity for the game to shine in that sense and on that stage. So, no, I don't think it would be. I, for one, I watch the World Series every year, but that would be pretty damn exciting. That'd be pretty damn exciting. And then I'd have to choose just how much I can stomach rooting for the Dodgers, because they've both really stepped into some evil empire territory. And I know that is an empire that Cub fans dream of stepping into. And I know it's a realm that the Red Sox stepped into. You know, it's Larry Lucchino is the one, the late Larry Lucchino just died, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago. The former Red Sox boss, Orioles boss as well, interesting and compelling figure in the history of baseball in lots and lots of ways. Larry Lucchino is the one who called the Yankees the evil empire, but then the Red Sox joined them. And that's just the way that it went. But yeah, Dodgers-Yankees World Series, that'd be pretty fun, I gotta say. Rob in Oswego is on 670 The Score. Good morning, Rob. Welcome into Hit and Run. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Speaks. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
I wanted to bring a couple points up, and Stoney brought it up about the Baltimore O's. They're hitting home runs.
Yeah.
And what I'm getting at is the Cubs, they're having a power outage. They got their in the lower six with only 46 home runs. The Yankees have 80. If you look at the top six teams in MLB right now, they're hitting the long ball. And it was kind of ironic because they sent PCA down, and what, he just had three home runs?
Yeah, he's got a home run. I think three homers in four games, all of them multi-hit games is what PCA has done.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is what it is. And I do like your point on Wainwright. He was awesome last night. And I was kind of skeptical when I turned it on. I'm like, oh, Wainwright, you know. I'm like, holy shit, this guy is very
we get that.
My French.
Yeah. No, the French is what's going to get you dumped and put on hold. But thank you so much for the call. I do love your comfort level as we sit here just kind of shooting the bleep on a Sunday morning, because that's what it's for. Yeah, I thought Wainwright was good. In fact, he had some stuff with Justin Steele we'll get to in our next segment. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Cubs power outage is real. The last 30 days, their on-base plus slugging percentage is dead last in all of baseball at a 614. The White Sox all the way up there at 26th at a 643. The last 30 days in MLB in terms of home runs, Cubs 28th, tied for dead last, along with the Blue Jays and the Chicago White Sox with 20 home runs in the last 30 days. There's more than one way to skin a cat. Due respect to the cat. No offense to the cat. But there's more than one way to do it. And stringing hits together and having rallies and having great at-bats is a wonderful thing. Cubs did that twice last night in that loss to St. Louis. Had some rallies stringing hits together. But no coincidence that both Happ and Suzuki's deep drives that almost left the park, almost gave them the lead, and did not in either event. That is for sure. It's 670 The Score. That's where you are. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. We'll take a look at the leaderboard in our next segment. Continue your phone calls. And also, you will hear some of that I mentioned from Adam Wainwright and Justin Steele. Top of the hour, Doug Glanville, after what looked to be an incredible event in Cooperstown yesterday. Keep it here on Hit and Run.
Hey, where are you from? You do have a good accent.
What have you seen?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From those guys while you were out, and what have you noticed when you've gotten back into the rotation from those guys?
Yeah, I would say in an age where you see a lot of people chasing velocity and different things like that, like even in rotations, I would say we got a good group of guys, like a good group that just goes out there and pitches. They do what they're good at, and they're able to maximize their strengths and really pitch around lineups and do what they do. And I would just say we have a good mix of that throughout the entire rotation. Even guys that have came and stepped in, like Wesneski, Wicks, Ben Brown, like the guys that are stepping up big time for us.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Lord, I was born oh, a little bit of that southern drawl getting in there. Sean Sears starting to feel himself. That's right. That's Justin Steele with the Mississippi fastball. And Adam Wainwright and Justin Steele getting cozy with each other, jamming to the Allman Brothers while Adam Amin looked on. All right, I couldn't hold the accent. I just couldn't do it. Here's a little bit of Wainwright and Steele becoming best friends on the air. They were getting deep in conversation and learning where each other was born and where the accents were from.
I think the entire baseball watching world, when you went down on your first start after such an incredible year last year, we were all kind of devastated because not only are you a great player and competitor and whooped me last year, but you're so important to that rotation, that team, that city. And so, I mean, you know, even as a former Cardinal player, I hated to see that, buddy. I'm glad you're back. You're so important to that team. We talked about the big three earlier, but this guy right here can be right at the top. And last year, if we remember, he was throwing Shota numbers up there. He was.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you. And, you know, you had a storied career yourself. Always enjoyed watching you pitch, especially growing up and stuff. So I really appreciate that coming
from you.
Thanks.
Now I feel very, very old. Thank you.
Oh, that's right.
No. Especially when I was very
growing That's a good
up.
Thing if you just retired last year. Yeah, that's a good thing.
I'll take it. I'll thank you, buddy.
Just a couple of good Southern boys being nice to each other and complimenting one another.
Hey, where are you from? You do have a good accent.
I'm just north of Biloxi, Lucedale, Mississippi. Okay. Everyone kind of knows where Biloxi is, so I always just say just north of there. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Where'd you say? Lucedale?
Lucedale.
Lucedale.
Yeah. L-U-C-E-D-A-L-E. I love it.
That's where Justin's from.
Oh. Hey, where are you from? You do have a good accent.
Yeah, you do. You got a real pretty mouth, is basically what he said right there.
Hey, where are you from? You do have a good accent.
Yeah, you do. Oh, Sean, where are you from?
I tell you what.
I don't know if I can get away with this much profiling. You know, like this much. Is it racist what I'm doing, going after the South right
now? I don't think so. My dad grew up in Houston. He sounds like this. He still says y'all every now and then.
I don't know. It's like when I talk in Italian. Hey, you want to come in? You want to try this spaghetti? Like, you can't do that. You can't. Maybe I can get away with it on a Sunday morning. But goodness, I enjoyed Wainwright, some of the hardcore specifics on pitching that he got into with both Michaelis and with Tyone, and also just the freshness from the game. There's always that comfort level when somebody is that quickly taken from the game and put into the booth. Couple of phone calls here we'll squeeze in before we talk to Doug Glanville. Very much looking forward to that at the top of the hour. Dan is out there near a Midway Airport. Hello, Dan. Hope it is. Is it raining out there, by the way, Dan?
Yes, pretty good, sir.
All right. Well, yeah, it's
morning, Matt. How are you?
Dan, I'm wonderful. How are you?
I had a couple of questions that's been bugging me about Hoyer. Why did he choose Bush and Madrigal over Mervis and Bodie? Okay. What has Bodie done to the Cubs? Did they hit him so much?
Dan, clear the throat. Let's keep Dan on hold. Hope Dan's okay. I appreciate the questions very much. Dan, let me respond about first David Bodie. It's a weird one. It really is a weird one right now. Bodie right now through 25 games in Iowa has an OPS of 923 with 6 bombs and 14 ribs. I think they know exactly what they have in Bodie, and I guess I think they believe in Madrigal more defensively at a variety of spots, but I've soured quite a bit on Nick Madrigal, big leaguer. I must admit, I don't see it in really any aspect at all. And I wonder how long that's going to play out. Thought maybe Craig Counsell would take a look and not see it in a way that would be beneficial for the conversation. We'll see if that indeed does take place. In terms of Bush, they really believe that Bush is a much more complete hitter than Matt Mervis. Mervis, every time he goes back down to AAA, he murders AAA pitching. Does it? But then he comes up and does not do that up here. We'll see what happens with Michael Bush, but I have no problem with them making the deal for Bush and giving him a good long look here. Just not sure we see it. And then did you have another question, Dan?
Yeah, why did he pass up on Chapman on the third base?
Oh, Matt Chapman. In terms of the cash allotment for the number of years, although Chapman ended up getting very little in terms of that from San Francisco. There was a comp draft pick also attached to Matt Chapman. Look, I don't think that's been your issue. I think Morrell's been pretty good there. I think Morrell's been pretty good there defensively. And I think Wisdom can play there as well. I don't think Chapman is that much of a massive upgrade. Defensively, he is, but I don't think it's that much of a massive upgrade there. I think some bullpen expenditures would have been nice, and I'd still like to see some in terms of prospects. You'll have to trade away, and I think catcher is more of an issue than any of us really saw coming. Miguel Amaya looks woefully overmatched. To Stan in Bellwood we go on a Memorial Day weekend. How are you, Stan?
Hey, Spies. Good morning. How are you?
I am very good. Thank you.
I'm enjoying the show. Hey, listen, can I keep this on or segue back to a national focus? Because I enjoyed some of the stuff you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
About the American League East. Listen, I would have bet the farm that your team of the moment was going to be the Cleveland Guardians. After what they did this week,
I've done them, Stan.
I can't play with the Yankees,
I've done them. I must admit, I'm looking forward to trying to get to a different team as often as possible when it's somebody I haven't done.
Well, you know what? In light of what they did to the Twins this week, I mean, they threw them down a flight of stairs, and you know. Slammed the door shut on the run that they were making. And you know, what they're doing, I just did not see coming. But as long as we're talking about the Yankees, though, it is interesting that they're doing what they're doing without Gerrit Cole. And he's close. He threw a couple innings the other day. It makes you think that the Orioles, of all the other teams in baseball, they're the team that should become a call into the White Sox about Fetty, because you know, if the Yankees keep going and Cole can, you know, get back to top form right away, they could open up some distance. So I'm thinking that the Orioles and all that you know what they have to offer, that's the team that should be interested more than anybody else for Eric Fetty.
Yeah, you know, it's a 3.17 starting pitcher ERA for the Orioles, but they keep getting hurt. So they've been good, but they keep getting hurt. So I think they do need another one. That's a good thought.
And, as far as the Yankees, everything that you delineated there, all good things, but their owner turned around and poured ice cold water over all of that goodwill by talking about trimming payroll as opposed to adding on. But you know what, those speaks, the New York media and the fans will not buy his poor mouthing. So he better come up with something else, because if they're not in the picture for signing Soto at the end of this year, there's going to be a bloodbath in New York.
Thank you so much, Stan. Appreciate it. Yeah, they're going to have to end up in that conversation. The way that Soto has been, it's just been so incredible. And if they have to find a way and, you know, shed some other deals if they need to, I suspect that they will get that done. And frankly, I hope it will be to their detriment. I hope that we will look back on that in a good, I don't know how many years it'll take to look back on that and say, oh, can you believe, you remember when they did that? I know they felt they had to, but look, that really sunk the franchise.
Remember they were team of the moment back in May of 2024?
It all turned around, baby. We look at the leaderboard every Sunday morning as a vestige of years past when the newspaper would print the leaders in all of the important statistics, but only on a Sunday. And you'd be like, oh my God, there's my guy. How about Ellie De La Cruz with 31 stolen bases?
Just bonker numbers.
31 stolen bases in 52 games. The man is on pace for a hundo and just is an absolute delight. Also has 9 home runs and an OPS over 8. And just is an absolutely incredible ball player. And looking at the home runs, as I was mentioning before, 17 is the number atop the MLB leaderboard for 3 players. One is Kyle Tucker of the Houston Astros, who has stepped up the power quite a bit. The other is Gunnar Henderson. And I believe that Gunnar Henderson is going to win MVP in the American League. I think Soto and Judge will pull some votes for each other. I have some money on Gunnar Henderson. And he would become just the fifth player to win MVP the year after winning Rookie of the Year. It's only happened four times in the history of baseball. The first was Cal Ripken Jr., and then it was Dustin Pedroia of the Red Sox, Ryan Howard of the Phillies, and then Chris Bryant of the Cubs. Those are the only four ever to do it. I do believe that Gunnar Henderson has a shot to get there. In terms of on-base percentage in all of MLB, it's the shortstop of the Dodgers and Mookie Betts. He's still right there with a .434 on-base percentage. And Jurickson Profar, second best in on-base percentage in all of baseball. There's a catcher in the top five, and it's William Contreras of the Milwaukee Brewers, who has emerged as a superstar and arguably the best catcher in the game. In terms of saves, it's 16 at the top for Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals. You saw him finish yesterday. And Emmanuel Clase, not Emmanuel Classy, as he was called incorrectly by accident in a piece of tape that will live forever and I enjoy so much, but Emmanuel Clase at 16 saves. Clay Holmes of the Yankees right there at 15. Kyle Finnegan, an interesting trade candidate on the Washington Nationals, a closer on a bad team, ought to be somebody that is indeed in some trade talks. And you've got Robert Suarez, who has 14 saves, an ERA of 0.4, a whip of 0.67, as he and Class A allow the fewest base runners of anybody with 10 saves or more. We'll take a break and talk to Doug Glanville about an incredible day, it seems, in Cooperstown yesterday. Tell a friend if they love Glanville, if they love thoughtful baseball conversation. We're still here on Hit and Run on the Score.
Emmanuel Clase.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.